Good evening and welcome to the November 16th, 2021 City of Bellevue Human Services Commission meeting. I'm Michelle Klein and I'm the chair of the commission. This evening's meeting and future meetings will be held remotely via Zoom. In order to comply with the governor's emergency order concerning the Open Public Meetings Act, which prohibits in-person meetings, this meeting is scheduled to end at 8 p.m. I'll now call the roll. Commissioners, please say here after I call your name. Vice Chair Ben Piper?
Here.
Samare?
Here.
Tim? Not here yet. Ted?
Here.
Sherry?
Here.
And Jude? Also not here yet. Hopefully Tim and Jude will be joining us. I just want to remind you all that because in-person meetings are prohibited by the governor's emergency order concerning the Open Public Meeting Act, the Human Services Commission is holding meetings remotely for an unknown period of time. The bylaws of the Human Services Commission regarding remote participation and the order of business have been suspended until such time as we are no longer holding meetings remotely. We have one set of minutes to approve tonight.
Chair Klein, Jude and Tim have both just joined the meeting and are present.
Great. So let the minutes reflect that 6:03, Jude and Tim have joined. Welcome. We have one set of minutes from the October 26th joint meeting to approve tonight. Would someone like to make a motion to approve those minutes?
Ben Piper, motion to approve.
And a second?
Sherry McClure, second.
Does anyone have any comments or corrections for those minutes? Hearing none, let's go ahead and move to a vote. All those in favor of approving the October 26, 2021 minutes as written, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Those minutes are approved. There's no opportunity for oral communications at the virtual meetings. All written comments that were submitted prior to 3 p.m. today will be read into the record. Dee Dee, do we have any comments submitted?
We do not this evening.
All right, thank you. We'll move on to communications from City Council Boards and Commission. Deputy Mayor, do you have some comments for us?
No formal report this evening, but I just wanted to alert the rest of the commission that myself, Tony, Christy, Dee Dee, and of course Chair Klein interviewed three wonderful candidates to fill the upcoming open slot on the Human Services Commission. Next step would be to finalize that selection, send that selection to the Greater Bellevue City Council to approve. And then they will be joining, after onboarding process, will be joining the commission. So look forward to announcing that shortly to everybody. But again, three wonderful candidates, and I think we would be honored to have any of them. But I think we have honed in on one in particular that we like, but don't want to say anything because we haven't alerted any of the candidates yet, nor has it been approved by the city council. So I look forward to welcoming them to the commission at the appropriate time. So thank you.
Thank you. Are there any, I guess we're going to have a communication tonight in our information from the commission from regarding the parks and open space, but is there any other information from any of the other boards or commissions to be communicated? Any commissioners that have anything to report tonight? All right, let's move on to staff reports. Do any staff have any reports?
I do not.
All right. Okay. Hearing none, we'll head on into information for the commission. We've had a request to change the order of the information for the commission items. We're going to do item B first, issues and transfer immigrants and refugees, so that the panelists that are all have joined us can report and then have the rest of the evening off. So, Christy, do you want to go ahead and introduce that panel?
Absolutely. I'd love to. I'm excited that we have four different agencies that will be presenting on the trends of immigrants and refugees tonight. So thank you for all spending your evening with us. There will be representatives from Four Tomorrow, Centro Cultural Mexico, and Immigrants Women's Community Center, and MAPS, the MCRC or Muslim Community Resource Center. So I've asked each of the panelists to start off by sharing their name, their organization, and who they are, talking about who their organization serves, what types of programs that they provide, and then what they see as the successes and the challenges in serving their representative communities for their human services needs. So unless I have somebody that's dying to go first, is there anybody that wants to go first? Okay, I'll go ahead and just follow the order that is was on the memo. So Monique is the executive director at For Tomorrow. So you are the lucky one to go first. And I know that Cynthia had also joined us as well. So I'll hand that over to you, Monique. And I will be keeping track of time because we do have 15 minutes per presenter and then the opportunity for our commission to ask questions.
Thank you. Christy, is there a chance for us to share screen and share a PowerPoint?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. Cynthia's going to share that. You want to put that in presentation mode, Cynthia? Perfect.
And we also all heard that you were out of the country right now, so thank you for being here this evening.
Yeah, it's 9 o'clock here, but I am here, and thank you all for welcoming us here into this space and wanting to learn more about us and what we do in the community. We really appreciate everything that you do for us. And all the opportunities that you've given us to build programs and to support our community in new and creative ways. Let's just get the presentation going here. Sorry about that. Cynthia, we can see the notes still.
Okay. Can you all see the presentation well?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Awesome. So I'll go ahead and introduce myself. My name is Cynthia Valenzuela. I'm originally from Rose City, Washington, and I moved out here to pursue a master's in social work. I have an emphasis in behavioral health, in children, youth, and families, and I really just love mental health and being a part of this work, especially with our Latino community here in East King County. So that's our team.
Awesome. Yeah, that's our team. And as you guys know, I'm Monique. I was the founder and director of For Tomorrow. And who do we serve? We serve and support underserved youth and families with a focus on the Latinx community in East King County. And although this is our focus, we serve anybody and everybody who calls us, and we try and connect them to the right people and provide them with whatever we have to provide. Next slide. One of the ways we do this is through the King County Eviction Prevention and Rental Assistance Program. Cynthia,
there you go.
Can see it. Okay. So this program helps King County residents, and I'm sure a lot of you have already heard of this program and how massive it is. And I know Centro Cultural is also in this program, and there's a lot of partners in this program. So pay pass-through rent up to 9 months and 3 months future rent. Through this program, For Tomorrow has been able to serve over 1,300 households, either with assisting them with the application process or providing resources to them, additional resources. Next slide. Next is the Bellevue American Rescue Plan Act. So this program allows us to serve residents of Bellevue by paying pass-through rent, mortgage, and mortgage payments, and 3 months future rent, which for a lot of our community is really life-changing. And for the year that we've been through, it's allowing them to get ahead and to hopefully save up and get caught up on other bills as well. Through this program, we can also provide move-in assistance to those experiencing housing instability. So, like I said, this is a game changer, and I'm sure you all are very aware of this program. So thank you very much. Next slide.
Awesome. So we just started our life service program this summer. We've been able to recruit 59 families, and we serve 234 families and participants who make up our program. So this is children, youth, and families that are being touched by our life service program. So what our life service program is we basically work one-on-one with each participant. We create goals emphasized on, you know, what they can achieve within a time frame of 4 months. We create goals so that we can also make sure that they're measurable and they're trackable. Each participant gets 4 hours of virtual support. And it's really accessible to our participants. They can call us and then we just hop on the phone with them and do just an appointment at home. So they don't necessarily have to go anywhere. We're really accessible and flexible. We also provide flexible emergency financial assistance for housing stability. And we've been able to do this by multiple programs. So our ARPA fund, EPRAP, and other LifeSpring services in our community. So we've just been leveraging resources in order to ensure that our life service participants stay housed. And we've been able to do this by these 8 families from life services through the ARPA funding. So that has been great for our families. Moreover, we do a lot of like care coordination around mental health. With a mental health referral to an outside organization within our community. Unfortunately, we are seeing a lot of barriers with accessing mental health resources, especially for our Spanish-speaking community. Noemi and I, Monique and I, have actually just been talking about pursuing a grant so that we are able to provide mental health services to our Spanish-speaking community here in East King County, just because there has been so many barriers. Like, I mean, there's a 3-month wait period for a person just to get a financial screening, and that's not even getting into therapy. So we just think that these barriers shouldn't exist for people who are in crisis and needing and wanting the help. So we're trying to see what we can do in order to diminish some of these mental health disparities. We also provide immigration support. We've been able to support 14 families in order to coordinate some immigration support, connecting them to resources in the community who support individuals seeking support with their immigration application, things like that. For our mental health service program, this is where we just connect with individuals who are seeking support with mental health. We do a lot of work around outreach. So we'll host events for the community. Last week, we held a virtual event, which had 51 participants. And just being a part of this conversation was really significant for us because it was our first conversation that we had with the community. And it was about mental health, understanding mental health. And so we were able to see such a good turnout with our community. And our community really wants the help. They're trying to understand mental health. And as a Latino community, you know, this isn't always easy to do, especially when there's so much stigma around mental health and we're all trying to understand mental health. So it was great to see our community come out there and, you know, just try to educate themselves around a topic that has been affecting a lot of people, especially now with COVID and so many things have been changing in our lives. So yeah, to provide services. Yeah, all our courses are in Spanish. So like the presentation was in Spanish. People were able to get culturally responsive information in their primary language and they were able to, you know, connect with each other as well as engage in topics that are just difficult to have in the Latino community.
Awesome. And I know we're running short on time, so I'm going to zoom through this, but the anti-racism project is something that we're very passionate about. So it started by a contract by King County to provide an assessment of our community's feedback on the proposed actions to address racism as a public health crisis. And so that turned into some raise your voice and usa tu voz. Usa tu voz was in Spanish for Spanish speakers in East King County, and raise your voice was for the youth. We held those, and we got some great feedback in order to mobilize our communities in an anti-racist effort, which is really exciting. And then after that, we joined the East King County Coalition Against Hate and Bias. So we've been actually actively reporting incidents of racism, hate, and bias to King County anonymously for our community. We also work to actively engage youth and advocate against systematic racism in schools and community. One of the ways we do that is through the BOOM experience through the Bellevue School District. So we actually co-host that with the Equity Department of the Bellevue School District. It's called Breaking Out of the Margins. And this year we're holding monthly events for the students of color in the Bellevue School District, which is also very exciting. Another new thing is the Right to Breathe partnership. So we've partnered up with the Right to Breathe group, which I hope that some of you have heard of. They're doing a lot of great advocacy work within the cities and the police departments in East King County to really advocate for change and lead with the Black voice. And so we've partnered up to create an alliance and an allyship and support each other to actively advocate in those situations. And this one's you, Cynthia.
So we've been holding conversations around the COVID health and vaccine topic. We know that a lot of the times this topic can be very taboo in the Latino community, and we're just trying to get out there into the community to let them know what the COVID vaccine does, what it is, and, you know, try to diminish some of the stigma that the COVID vaccine has. So we've actually held a few fairs. This past weekend, we had an outreach event in Bellevue where we just like talked to community members about the COVID vaccine and try to diminish some of the negative stigma that comes associated with the COVID vaccine. And then we're in partnership with King County Promotoras. So we also hold conversations virtually. And we've had a great turnout with these events. All the time we have around 30 participants join our conversations. And this is where we bring on healthcare workers, individuals in the community that speak Spanish, who identify as Latinx. And we bring them on so that they can talk to our community and let them know about the COVID vaccine, where they can get it. We also coordinate COVID vaccine things for our community. So if they, for some reason, call us and they're like, okay, I want to get my COVID vaccine, then we'll go ahead and be like, all right, here's a place near you where you can get your COVID vaccine. And it's held every second and fourth Wednesday of each month.
Great. Next slide. All right, so we're at the end, and this is where we're going to talk about some of the challenges and successes. We'll definitely start with challenges and then end with successes because we want to end on a good note. Some big challenges that we are seeing is, you know, historically big systems don't work for the little people. And so something as big as EPROP sometimes can be very inequitable, and so we're having to advocate a lot even within that within that community. There's a lot of lack of access to tech support, lack of access to a computer, a phone, all of the things. There's just a lot of support needed from our community. Another thing could be there's not that many flexible funding sources. So for immediate needs, like we had a situation a couple weeks ago that was a referral from the Bellevue School District, and these three girls hadn't been showing up to class, and they're cousins and they're all in the same class. And the family engagement specialist called and asked, hey, what's going on? Why are the girls not coming? And they said, we don't have money to pay our tabs, so we can't drive the girls to school. And we were able to provide them with our 4U fund, which is $400 of flexible emergency funding directly to the family to use for whatever they need. So a lot of times the things that they use them for are car tabs, prescriptions, just immediate needs that there's no other funding for. because life can take you anywhere and there's so many obstacles and sometimes we just need a little bit of help.
Yeah, another challenge that I would say with EPRAP is just sometimes not being given access to like a tech person to help us with EPRAP applications. Sometimes there's glitches in the system and it prevents us from processing applications. But a success I will share with EPRAP is when we complete those applications, people are just so happy and so grateful. And honestly, we've served so many people. And in particular, one outreach event, I remember just a participant crying because of the fact that we were, well, EPRAP was going to pay for 3 months in advance. And they were just like, they had been borrowing money this entire time from other family members, getting in debt just so they could pay their rent.
All right, should we talk about successes now? I think creating culturally sensitive and culturally responsive programs, and that's what we've been able to do to address some of those barriers and to be able to walk with the family to identify the barriers as well. Immigration status, language barriers, lack of education or knowledge of systems. And so we're able to walk with them and navigate those and navigate through the system, which is amazing. And it also means advocating along the way. So when we see something, we say something and we do something about it. Another thing is just ARPA. We're so grateful because it's a faster process than EPRAP. There's a lot less steps and there's a lot less people involved. So we're able to get people through a lot faster, especially now that the moratorium has ended and we are seeing a lot of eviction notices come out. And we are working closely with ELAP and the Bellevue Conflict Resolution Center and other providers to maintain housing for our community. But it's getting a little rough out there. So we're really grateful.
I have
for
1 minute left.
Okay.
Yeah. Another success that I want to emphasize is our life service program. Honestly, we took this program, we built it virtually, and we were able to recruit 59 participants. And one of the things that I have always found really cool about this is that we have participants constantly referring people they know from the community. And that just goes to show for us that, you know, we are serving our individuals, we are giving them what they need, and it shows because they're referring so many other people to our program. So that is just one thing that I wanted to share. And also that we have secured housing for all of our participants through the end of the year. And that's one thing that really brings them peace of mind and also brings us peace of mind knowing that like no family is going to get evicted or be homeless.
Awesome. I think we're out of time anyways, but is there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions?
I have a quick question. This is Samira.
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if you can talk about a little bit about a typical client that presents with mental health problems.
I'll let Cynthia handle that.
So during my assessment that I do over the phone, I go ahead and ask them a series of questions. One of them is specific to mental health. The participant then is given like the ability to say like whether or not they've been experiencing mental health issues over the phone. A lot of the times I have to do some psychoeducation over the phone about what mental health is, how it affects people, and what are the symptoms of it. After that conversation is had, then they usually come forward and say like, okay, I have been experiencing mental health issues and I would like to get some help with this. A lot of the times some people are just like, yeah, but I'm not ready to fully get the mental health services, but I want to know more. So then we would just start off as a goal of psychoeducation. But a lot of the times it just depends on the participant, whether or not they're ready to take that next step.
Yeah, but what do you see typical? Like, do they present mostly with depression, anxiety, both?
Anxiety.
PTSD, a combination of all?
A lot of anxiety, specifically surrounded around housing, basic needs, jobs. A lot of people have lost their jobs. A lot of people are, like I said, borrowing money just to pay their rent. And so that has caused a lot of stress and anxiety for them.
Thank you.
Tim?
Forgive my ignorance, but could you elaborate on this EPAP application electronic that you said was a barrier? And is that like a government application, electronic application that you struggle with and your applicants struggle with?
Yeah, it's a King County application, and it's a King County system. And I think the barrier is that the system is brand new. And so there's a lot of kinks to work out, and the database is brand new. So it's a lot on the technical side and on the county side. But as far as the tenants, for our community, sometimes they don't have access to a computer. It's not easy to do on their phones or on their smartphones. They don't even sometimes use email. And that's what the database uses, is the email, and you have to create a password and account. So those are some of the barriers we're seeing with that program. And that's kind of what we're there to alleviate, is the outreach and assistance piece, is that we can sit there on the phone and do the application over the phone with them to hopefully help. But there's still a lot of people out there that we probably aren't connected to that need the help as well.
See, thank you.
Any other commissioners? I have a really quick question for Monique. Fort Tomorrow is a pretty young agency. Could you just give us like your elevator speech on how it was formed and what your previous background was and how it all came to be?
Yeah, so I studied psychology in college, and then I ended up working for the Bellevue School District as a family engagement specialist at Lake Hills. So that's where I really became immersed in the community in Bellevue, and especially the Latino community there. I started seeing a lot of underserved youth and families, and there was just some frustration growing within me on that I couldn't help more, especially in my role. Because there's just a lot more restrictions. And so I created For Tomorrow to kind of create that support system and connect people to resources and apply for funding and to be able to bridge those gaps and to be able to work with those community organizations and the Bellevue School District who have the families who they can't serve fully because there's just a lot of barriers and systems.
So what year did you form? And you had quite a few staff listed. Are those paid or volunteer?
We formed in 2019. And yes, those are all full-time paid staff. And we also do have a couple other part-time that weren't on that slide.
Thank you.
Yes, of course.
Any other questions for Tomorrow? All right, Christy, let's move on to the next panelist.
Great. So the next one I had was Angie and Carlos from Centro Cultural Mexicano.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone, and it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Angie Hinojos. I am the executive director and founder of Centro Cultural Mexicano, and I'll invite Carlos to introduce himself.
Carlos may be muted.
He's not showing up as muted, but we're not able to hear you, Carlos. Okay, now you're muted.
Okay. No, it must be a speaker issue. Okay, I'll go ahead and then see if you can play with the speaker. But Carlos is the Director of Policy and Community Services here, and he's also the co-founder of Centro Cultural Mexicano. And so we have six paid staff members and growing. We're going to be adding another one this week. And we serve the entire community with a particular emphasis on the Latino and Spanish-speaking community, as well as the immigrant community and low income. And we're making more outreach into indigenous Mesoamerican communities because we're seeing more of a need here on the east side for the particular needs of those communities. We founded this organization to to provide an inclusive space where the Latino community and others can connect for increased social as well as civic participation. It's a place where they can access services and educational opportunities with the ultimate goal of stability and empowerment for our communities. We utilize art and culture as powerful tools of engagement. The access to art and culture allows for deeper connections between people, and we find that people are generally more open to making connections with each other across communities, but also connecting with services when we utilize art and culture as the tools of engagement. So we very often, people might come here to hear traditional Mexican music and eat tamales together, but by the end of the evening, they've left with information on how to get a vaccination, or they've left with a vaccination, and information about rent assistance or a myriad of other services that we offer. We connect disparate communities together in ways to promote conversation, reflection, deeper understanding of each other's needs and individuals as well as communities, and to foster respect and lasting positive change in our communities. And we have great relationships with lots of different entities on the east side and beyond. And we're very happy that we have excellent relationships with the Consulado de México in Seattle. And that really gives us that extra sort of outreach where we work together to partner, where we can help them with outreach. We were able to help with vaccinations of people who were coming to them, and then we partner with them on other things. We provide a variety of programs. One big program is rent assistance. That's on everybody's mind right now, and it's the number one thing that people are coming to us about. We have provided over the course of the pandemic almost $3 million in rent assistance. And we're happy to report that as of today, we have distributed $467,000 in Bellevue ARPA funding for rent assistance. And that's out the door. And then on top of that, we completed not too long ago $120,000 of community development block grant funding. So that is such a huge benefit to the residents of the city of Bellevue. Through the funding you have granted us, we have seen just the relief that there is an offer of rent, but also the move-in assistance, loan assistance. This is huge. We are getting calls from all over the region asking about this program. And it's innovative, and we're not seeing it everywhere else. So I Carlos and I want to extend a thank you on behalf of the community for having such an innovative vision, really, about how we can provide services that are relevant to the moment and needed in the moment. Beyond that, we have been very active with COVID-19 vaccination outreach and education. We very early saw a need for advocacy in this arena, because we saw the data was very clear that our community across the state was being shut out of the vaccine phasing plan. The data showed that we were not getting vaccinated. Even when we were celebrating the 70%, our community wasn't at 70%, and now with a five and up, we're not at 70% again because of the average of how that works out. So we put a proposal together for the Redmond vaccination site, which is run by Microsoft Evergreen Overlake and Seattle Public Health King County, and we were able to directly facilitate 15,000 vaccinations of Latino community members in East King County directly to that site. And we're really proud of that work, because that was a time when our community was knocking on many doors and no one was answering. And we were able to work with partners who understood the necessity of what we were asking for. In regards to the work that we did throughout the pandemic, Governor Inslee recently appointed me to the Pandemic After Action Review Task Force for the state of Washington. So we will be able to represent our community in this statewide pandemic task force, which will share some of the obstacles and some of the successes throughout that time. We also co-lead a statewide coalition of over 40 Latino organizations who advocate for pandemic equity. So we are still active with vaccinations. We are all of our events feature available vaccinations. And our last event, Dia de Muertos, which was just a week and a half ago, we had 500 people here. It was an outdoor event, COVID safe. We had 500 and we vaccinated 41 at that event. So, and some of those were first time vaccinations. They were not all boosters and they were not all second. So we're really happy that, even though the message may take a few times, it is getting to people. We also provide small business supports. We see a great need on the east side for micro businesses and small businesses to access information, funding, opportunities, and support for, around compliance with state requirements. And there are really great resources on the east side. The issue is connecting those great resources where our small businesses who might have it's basically connecting and so that they can have the language access. So so we've been working with community with different ways, different collaborations to try and provide those kinds of services. And then on the education front, which is very close to our hearts because we see the work we do as providing basic needs for sure. That's a huge part of what we do. We also know that education is going to be necessary to get our communities to a place where they can attain wealth so that they can make decisions in their lives and have opportunities and choices. And wealth leads to empowerment and power, really, in a system that is built that way. And so education is near and dear to us. We are working with the Latino Center for Health at University of Washington, the Information School at University of Washington on some special projects. We have two high school interns currently working with us each week. And then we involve youth in everything we do. Sometimes it's paid, sometimes it's unpaid. It depends on the project and the length of time. And then we also have great relationships with Bellevue College and Cascadia College. So we are working on different projects with them. We look at it, our work as providing, as I said, those services and needs, but it also has to do with the long-term view and representation. So we're involved in state level redistricting advocacy because that really boils down to what kinds of services end up happening within our own community. So we know we have to look at the big picture as well as the immediate picture close to home. And then I'll just touch on art and culture a little bit because that is really the mechanism that allows us to reach community in the way that we do. We have built an incredible amount of trust with the Latino community in East King County. When we opened Centro Cultural Mexicano, there is no organization that has a physical space here that does what we do. And so we're here. Our community knows it. We get people walking in the door from all over East King County, from all the way from north and south and east and west, walking through the door every day, all day, because they know we're here and they know that they will sit face to face with a person and have their needs met. It was really, really important to us. And it was a struggle to maintain this place throughout the pandemic. I'm not going to say it was easy, but it was imperative that we do that. And we've been able to do it. We produce over 25 cultural events per year. The average is about 300 people or so per event, but our Cinco de Mayo event draws about 7,000 people. And it really varies. You know, our last event was 500. It just varies. At every single one of those events, we are providing information about services, information about, we're giving a name. Here's how we're going to do this. And there are people there helping them. Okay, this is the process. And this is when you can come in and let's talk more. And so that outreach is so critical and essential. And when it's done in a place and a time that is where the pressure is kind of taken off, it's very effective. So our successes, I think, have been in providing opportunity and access for our communities in need. Opportunity for us is, are there services available to fill the need? And so we analyze the current situation. We look at data. We collect data ourselves. We look at existing data that's out there. We analyze it. We then start looking at solutions. And sometimes that's collaboratively. We work collaboratively with a lot of organizations on the East Side. And then we advocate for the implementation of those solutions. And then as far as access goes, the question there is, can our community reach those services even if they exist and if they're there? So again, having a physical space is a big part of being able to have access, because we have people that, you know, we have community members who might call us and say, I can't get off work till 6 o'clock. Will you be there? We'll be here. If the light's on, we're here. Come on over. And it's just that, you know, they'll be bicycling home from work and they can stop in. They can reach us. It's that give and take that is essential in service to community. It's that two-way communication and that relationship, really. It's a relationship built on mutual respect and mutual trust. And then we're just always looking for our North Star is community. Our motto is community first. So we're always looking and listening, and that's how we approach. Some of the challenges are just things are evolving so quickly, especially through COVID. It's been an extremely devastating time. There's a lot of trauma in our communities, a lot of trauma. The needs are sometimes so huge that it's hard for community members to even get their head around their own, to even ask for help or finish an application, because it just feels so big and so overwhelming. Thank you. We spend a lot of time explaining and talking and really trying to share that these services are for them, and that they are deserving of it, and that we're going to help them through the process. I'll leave it there. I think we're getting to a place where, and I want to say one last thing, and that is that we are going to be opening a space in Bellevue. We're looking for a space right now. We're at Mini City Hall right now, but we are opening our satellite space soon, and I will keep everyone apprised of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Angie. Commissioners, are there questions?
Yeah, this is Samira again. I'd love to hear from Carlos regarding his work on policy. What are the challenges?
We can't hear you, Carlos. Would you like to come over here and use this one? Okay, sorry about that technical issue. I'm going to move out of the way so we can answer that. Okay, thank you.
I apologize for the technological problems, but to answer the question, when it comes to policy, I think we develop a really close relationships at the state level. Legislatures form an extremely important part when you are working or you're doing advocacy with to change legislation or to propose legislation. There is new legislation coming. So we got a strained social relationships at all levels with legislatures on both sides. And that's been one of the successes. You probably, some of you know, I was the actual founder of the Latino Legislative Day, and that was the purpose, to promote legislation at all levels more than anything right now at the state level.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Any other questions from the commissioners? Carlos, what year was Centro Cultural Mexicano formed?
The year that we got the keys from the property owner, it was almost at the end of the summer of 2018. So from that on, it's just been a really beautiful ride. And it's also, you know, we've been open for more than 3 years, and the pandemic has stopped some of our work, but it hasn't detained our service to the community. So it's been over 3 years, but we are extremely happy that we have a physical space. And we are also extremely happy to work with the city, such as the city of Bellevue, on such of an innovative program, like Angie stated before. And I want for you to know one thing, the program that you have implemented and allow us to work with and trust us to do the work has been looked nationwide. The program that you approved, that you implemented, is one of a kind in the nation. So there is many cities across the country looking on how successful this program is going to be, because no one across the country is doing loan, credit card, mortgage, and moving. So we've been getting questions. How were you able to convince the city to work in such a busted program? And I said, well, they realized that the need is there. So they work with the vision that the cities are there to provide and to help the community when it's needed. I just wanted to convey that to you.
Thank you. Appreciate that. And thank you to Angie, too. Let's move on to our next presenter.
Great. So the next agency that we'll be presenting is Immigrants Women's Community Center. And Jennifer, the board president, and I believe Nura is, if that's how you pronounce it, is also has joined us. So I'll pass it on to you.
Sorry for the delay. Trouble finding my cursor to unmute myself. So thank you for letting us join you here tonight. My name is Jennifer Carls. I am president of the board for Immigrant Women's Community Center. We go by IWCC, so you'll see that in our presentation. I am joined tonight by Nura Adam, who is a founder and our executive director, and also by Zarbi Kakar, who is our refugee support coordinator. So they're both going to speak with you tonight as well. So just really quickly, our team is, as I mentioned, Nura and Zarbi, and our board consists of 4 individuals, all of whom have been founding members of this organization, myself, Faith Reeves, Sherry Hall, and Zane Kroc. And so just a little bit about IWCC. We formed in April of 2020. We have been fortunate enough to have received our nonprofit status, so we are really pleased about that. Our mission is to provide community building, training, and direct services, primarily for immigrant and refugee families, promoting their financial independence, emotional health, and physical well-being, allowing the families, their children, all to thrive. And as I mentioned, Nura and I founded the organization. The actual organization formed in April of 2020, but this is work that particularly Nura has been doing in the community for decades, really. And so the need has become so great that we realized that we needed to kind of formalize the work that we were doing and make that work more sustainable and be be able to help more families. So our work is to come alongside women to empower them through education, support, and helping them navigate complicated systems while they meet their families' needs. We have resources that we help them provide. We kind of think about filling the gaps, right? And also partnering with community-based organizations who provide rental assistance or employment services, that kind of thing. So we're really there to help them, help these families find the services they need and understand kind of that systems navigations piece. And we do so in linguistically and culturally appropriate ways. So I am going to, I'm going to leave it there and I'm going to let Neera jump in. And Neera, if you're ready, I'm going to let you take over.
Thank you, Jennifer. And thank you, City of Bellevue for having us here today. So as Jennifer mentioned, our services and programs are as follows. We have a case management team who are focused in helping and in empowering our immigrant and refugee communities in a culturally and linguistically appropriate manner. We also help the families in with their basic essential needs, as well as connecting them to resources, whether it's legal, mental health, and all other resources that we are not providing. We focus on really bridging the gap. So if there are resources available in the community with our other community partners, we collaborate and partner with them and make sure that all of our community members are connected to those resources. We are an immigrant women's community center. We have about 80 different nationalities that are associated with our organization. It has become a third place where people meet, come to know each other, become connected, and it also has really served as a network. So a lot of people, once they get to know each other and what they do, if someone is unemployed and have special skill set, it has become a space where people connect and really help each other with incredible connections. In that way, a lot of people were employed and had advanced in a way that is really incredible. We do monthly, weekly programming, and we spend a lot of effort and continue to do so with COVID information and outreach. We're also part of the Redmond vaccination and partnership with Microsoft and our other community partners here, Cultural Mexicano and For Tomorrow, with COVID referrals, and also really spending a lot of time educating and outreach and really opening up a conversation where community can ask all kinds of questions who are hesitant to get the vaccines. We invite doctors and public health specialists to come and speak to our community virtually and answer their questions directly. We're also part of the anti-racism project, hate and bias survey. And so we do interview the communities in the East Side and understand their journey as it pertains to hate and biases and work with our community partners to find solutions and speak about ways of implementing policies or proposing policies that could hopefully help eliminate these negative energies in our community. We also have healing circles. It's a community support space where the community comes together and we talk about anything that is really a pressing issue. This last Monday, we talked about issues that pertain to COVID and the stresses that come with people who are unable to get vaccinated. One of our community members talked about how she's unable to get vaccinated for health reasons, and that has affected the family's financial income because she's unable to now work as a medical interpreter since she's not vaccinated. And so we talked about that, and we talked about what the people are experiencing and how we can bring these stories to public health and CDC and other spaces where these conversations are really important to be heard from both sides of the community. There was also another community member who talked about how important it is for everyone to be vaccinated because her health issues have become a barrier for her to be vaccinated, but she's afraid of catching the virus. And she encouraged all of us to be vaccinated so that she can be safe as well. Story and the barriers are far too many, and we take the time to listen and allow people to express their discomfort or whatever the stress level is in their lives. So we create a safe space for community to come together and share. The last Monday of every month is our storytelling and community gathering. That is where a first-generation immigrant person talks about their journey coming to the United States, their experiences, expectations, and so on. And then we also have children of immigrants talk about their own journey as well. So it's really exciting. I invite all of you to join us the last Monday of every month. We go to different parts of the world. Like I said, we have over 80 different nationalities. So we have gone from Mexico, we've gone to Russia, India, we've gone to China, and we're going to Pakistan this Monday. So it's an exciting time, and people do gravitate towards that meeting and that storytelling time. A big part of our services is also peace building. We have mediation services as well as conflict resolution services, healing circles. We help our community with gaining skill sets so that they are well equipped to have the conflict resolution skill sets they need, whether it's at school for their children or workplace, etc. Our goal is to empower the families and give them the necessary skills they need to grow and to reach their potential. We also offer workshops and training programs that is focused on emerging needs and in partnership with other community partners. We have cultural sensitivity training programs for both our newcomers, the new refugees that we are helping right now, as well as the providers, whether it be the schools, workplace, etc. We have mediation workshops and community resources. Where we see success is the transformational work with our refugee families and immigrant families. Connections made in the community, like I said earlier, people really have created a network of community where people get to learn each other's cultures, challenges, as well as they have created their own amazing network system where people are getting employment and so on. We also have support of individuals and organizations where we refer services that we do not provide, such as legal, mental health, and so on. Our challenge has been we're a very new organization, barely a toddler, under 2 years old. So lack of resources for needed case management support. Our community is growing fast. In 3 weeks' time, we have gotten 42 families, mostly refugees from Afghanistan. And about 10% of that number was refugees from Syria. So as you can imagine, our model is one family per week, but it has become 5 to 8 families per week where we meet the essential needs of the families, from finding them a house or if they have a place to live. 90% of the time, they have nothing in there. So We have been very lucky to have a very generous community where furnitures are being donated, and a generous community who's been helping us with dispersing those furnitures to the families that need, as well as clothing. We make sure to provide the families with gift cards for food and other essential needs that we are unable to provide. And then at that point, we work with them in, with employment, schools, provide them ORCA cards, and make sure that they know how to catch the bus from their home, workplace, school, and back, so that they're able to be on their feet. We don't leave these families until they reach their potential. So once the big hurdle is done with getting them settled, it's sort of really getting them on the next stage for the family to thrive and reach their potential. A lot of the challenges are also a lot of the families come here with language, cultural, and systemic barriers. So our case managers are from share the same culture. So you will hear from Sarpi Kagar now, who's our refugee support coordinator. Herself is from Afghanistan, and she has been an incredible asset to our community. So we hire case managers that share their culture and language so that it will be easier for them to feel that they don't have to pre-explain their culture to us, and that they can meet someone that they can easily connect and trust. Also, as a new organization that's a nonprofit, part of our challenge has been that it's a bit complicated system for nonprofits to navigate, right? We are focused on serving the community. So if we find that the system is a bit challenging to track and trace, we'll have to make the choices. Do we need to hire someone just to do the paperwork, or should we just let this grant go and choose one that is more fitting of what we are doing? And of course, we trace and are very transparent in our work and what we do. But we are very small. Our staff is still very small for the amount of work we do, and we're growing very fast. So those choices are things that we have to make very quickly. So now I would like to introduce Sarbi Kagar, who is our refugee support coordinator. Thank you.
Thank you, Noura. Hello, everyone. It's wonderful to be with all of you. As Noura said, my name is Sarbi Kagar, and I am IWCC Refugee Support Coordinator. I am Afghan American. I am also a refugee. I came to Seattle with my mother during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. So I know exactly what it means to be a refugee. Our connection starts right away with the family as soon as we receive the information. I call our Afghan families and introduce myself. And it's amazing with every family that I have introduced myself, their initial response has always been to every family a sigh of relief that they are speaking with someone that speaks their language. And not only their language, their own dialect that they are always so surprised at.
You have 1 minute.
Our biggest challenge has been affordable housing, just like everybody else has mentioned. But as soon as we arrive and receive a housing, our team gets so excited and planning how we will decorate this place for this family and how to celebrate this family. We empower each family so that these families can empower the next family that comes into our community. And this has been a model for us. So no matter what hurdles, what challenges we are going through with our new families coming into our community, our biggest model has always been to serve these families with compassion, respect, and humanity, and most of all with kindness, because we know, and I myself know, what tragedy and what challenges they have been through just arriving here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Commissioners, any questions?
I have a question for Zarbi or Noura. This is Samere. My question is regarding the new arrivals, whether it's Syrian refugees that you just mentioned or Afghan refugees. So the WOLAGs are responsible for resettlement of these refugees, at least for 6 months when they come in. So how do you collaborate with WOLAGs, and what are the challenges that you see in terms of collaboration and their resettlement of our refugees in Washington State?
I will let Sabi answer that question.
So, for example, I had a family today that was asking for housing, and I called the case worker today to make sure to see if this family is already on one of our agencies' list. Because if they are already, they already have a caseworker working with them, I find out what that caseworker has already provided for that family and what is still missing so that we can fill the gap for that family. So really, I like to think of myself and our organization as the gap filler. Other organization, when they do come in, they do provide. So the caseworker will help them apply for DSHS services. The caseworker will help them find housing. But if they don't, a lot of them are coming on their own. And if they don't have a caseworker, that's where they find us. And that's where we meet the gaps.
Thank you so much, Sarvi. I guess my question is specifically regarding refugee resettlement by WOLAGs. Which WOLAGs do you collaborate with? And what part of the resettlement that you take on, because they are mandated by government to take care of the refugees resettled for at least 6 months. So I'm just trying to figure out who does what and where do you fill the gap? Which WOLAG do you collaborate with?
Well, we collaborate with IRC, we collaborate with Jewish Family Services, we collaborate with Lutheran Community Services. We really work with a lot of agencies depending on who that family's caseworker is with.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where, then once I find out who the caseworker is and what agency is already providing with for the family, then I collaborate with that caseworker or with that agency.
Okay, got it. Thank you so much.
And also what we provide is we come in immediately to the family that have been housed or they are living in their relative homes, sometimes in motels and hotels. They come with the clothes on their back. Where IWCC jumps in, we provide them jackets, we provide them warm clothes, we provide them food, we provide them blankets. I mean, at that time, their space is very limited, but whatever that initial immediate need is, that's what we provide.
Thank you, Zarbi. Commissioners, any other questions? All right, well, Noura, Jennifer, and Zarbi, thank you so much. We'll move on to our last presenter.
Great. So our last but not least presenter is MAPS MCRC, or Muslim Community Resource Center. So, Nikhat, I'll go ahead and pass this off to you.
Thank you, Christine. Hi, everyone. My name is Nikhat Sharif, and I'm grateful to the City of Bellevue and the City Council's Human Services to hear us today. My name is Nikki Sharif, founder and CEO of MAPS MCRC. And I have Khazir here with me, who is the co-founder and executive director.
Hello, everyone. Thank
MAPS
you for
MCRC.
Having us.
Yeah. And you want to, I'll have Khazir talk about MCRC and the services we are providing.
Yeah, first of all, thank you all for giving us this opportunity. I have a deck, a small slide, but before that, I just want to kind of like share a little bit about MCRC. MCRC is the Social and Humanitarian Program of MAPS, the Muslim Association of Puget Sound, located here in Redmond. And really, MCRC started off with a mission to really love for humanity what we love for ourselves. That's really our motto and our goal. We really serve the greater Seattle area through a portfolio of interconnected services. And over the years, MCRC has really become a platform for bringing the community together, mostly a lot of Muslim organizations to serve humanity. So we are really become the platform to serve humanity and serve our extended community. Even though we are a Muslim organization, more than 70% of the people that we serve just happen to be non-Muslim. So we are, we do not discriminate based on faith, race, gender, color, or anything else. Our office is located here in Redmond. If you give me the ability to share, I have one slide that basically talks about what we do.
Let me make sure you should have the ability to share your screen.
Okay. So yes. Just a little bit. I mean, MCRC is a pretty broad organization. We have a variety of programs, and all of our programs are interconnected. When someone comes to us, asking for food, we realize that hunger is just the tip of the spear. They have a lot of other needs, right? So they may need legal assistance, they may need, healthcare assistance, they might need housing and rental support. There's a whole variety of other services. So our organization provides a portfolio of interconnected services. And where we are unable to provide those services, we connect those people to other organizations. So really, we aspire to like serve, connect, and collaborate. That's really our goal. We don't want to reinvent the wheel, but at the same time, we want to provide socially and culturally appropriate services to people who need assistance, right? So let me walk you through some of the programs that we have. So this is just for the last year, just a snapshot, and it doesn't reflect the current numbers, but just wanted to give you a flavor of some of the metrics and some of the programs that we have, right? If you look at the left-hand side, it'll just walk you through this. Our food programs, we have a whole portfolio of programs around food, right? From serving hot meals at different shelters, to providing food cards, to providing non-perishable food. There's a whole slew of services that we provide around our food programs. Just some of the metrics from the last year, 5,000 plus families provided with non-perishable food. Every Ramadan, which is the ninth month of our Muslim calendar, we provide these care boxes. Last time we provided, 2,000 plus of these food boxes to anyone who needed them. We serve hot meals. Like in fact, this Thanksgiving we're going to be doing drive-through hot meal distribution at the facility here. So anyone needs a meal can drive through and pick up a box. We distribute food cards. In fact, we are one of the few organizations left on the King County Emergency 911 hotline for this program. So we provide food and gas cards. A lot of families living in cars who need gas cards can come to our office and pick them up. We also provide food cards. Especially this was really during COVID. This was a huge need that a lot of people were, even though a lot of these service organizations were closed, MCRC continued to be open, and this was one of the hottest or the most in demand services. We also have our own community clinic. I want to talk a little bit about that. And this was a physical clinic that used to happen at a mosque, but during COVID, everything moved online. And everything is now is done through telehealth. Just in the last year, we provided 400 plus of those free medical and wellness telehealth consultations. We have a dedicated team of volunteer doctors who provide this care. During the COVID time, I mean, we were the first organization to step up and provide, vaccines. We started off with the most vulnerable in our community, our seniors. We made those available through a partnership that we had with Albertsons Group of Pharmacies. And then we also organized vaccine working partnership with King County Public Health. We actually organized a vaccine clinic multiple times at our facility. It was free, right? Surgical masks and supplies during COVID, distributed those. And then the most exciting thing that we did, and most in need thing was this, wellness seminars and emotional wellness, clinics and, what we call Mindful Tuesdays that we started. We have a wonderful person who brings in a mix of, faith, spiritual aspects, as well as, some of the clinical aspects. So we provided 300 plus hours of these wellness summer seminars or consulting hours with an individual whose name is Yasser Fazaga. That happens every Tuesday, and then one-on-one counseling happens every Monday. So that's been a huge need. That we've seen a lot of people, anxiety, depression, people needing some emotional support with domestic violence, all of them. It's a free emotional wellness consulting that we offer through our community clinic. Most of that is now online. Housing and rental support over, that's been a huge a pillar of our services. We provided over last year 750. We have our furniture warehouse we've furnished 250 plus homes. Some of them are immigrants and refugees who've been referred through other organizations to us. We said, can you furnish these homes? People have moved in. So we've over 250 plus homes have been furnished. Motel nights. I mean, again, we are the only one of the few organizations that provides these emergency motel nights. So families fleeing some lot of times, we have women fleeing from domestic violence who need a safe place to stay. They don't have a place. So, they need an emergency motel night, or families living in cars. Any one of those, I mean, we provide motel nights for individuals, families who just need a safe place to stay for a few days. We run our own transitional program for single women. We have 6 units of transitional housing for single women. This is a socially and culturally appropriate, safe space for single women. We added one in 2020 in Bellevue. So basically, we have 3 in Bellevue. We have 1 in Renton and 1 in Seattle. And all of these leases are fully paid by MCRC. Women who need a safe place, we put them in. Then we currently have about 15 women currently in the program, right? We have a program for seniors called Golden Times. And this is a pretty unique program. Again, a lot of our seniors, they feel socially distant, especially during COVID, right? So we used to have these programs of social connection at our facility, in physical facility, but now everything is moved online. And it's amazing, our seniors have become so, Zoom savvy. They dial in every week, for social interaction. They have, laughing therapy and yoga. Everything is happens online every, the laughing therapy is happening, every day, every weekday. A couple of other things I want to emphasize here, our Afghan refugee support. I mean, MCRC has been in this business for a long time, so we have the infrastructure. We know how to work with, people in need, communities in need. We've seen an influx of refugees coming. It started off with, Iraqi refugees, Syrian refugees a few years ago, and now we are seeing refugees from Afghanistan coming in. So we have a robust intake process and a case management process to help and quickly you know, respond to these need. Even before this current crisis started, 400 plus families have, from Afghanistan who were already here. We work in close partnership with, you know, for, with several local on the ground Afghan organizations. Like, for example, the, there's an organization called the Afghan Health Initiative. So they, and there's an Afghan mosque located in the Kent area. So we've already been serving 400 plus families with rent and utilities, support and food. There's, we expect in this area like 2,000 plus new families in the next year.
Individuals.
And then individuals, sorry, thank you. So far, about 250 families have been assisted with food, 150 families assisted with rent, and the number of those families through our furniture warehouse, we've helped furnish their their homes. See, one other thing that I'll mention here is about the legal clinic. Again, in partnership with the King County Bar Association and the Neighborhood Clinic Program, as well as an organization called MELA, Middle Eastern Law Association, we provide free legal counsel. You know, it's completely free for the first hour is completely free. So all of that has now moved online during COVID. To date, you know, about 200 plus hours of pro bono legal consultation has been provided. A lot of them, we get a lot of, you know, legal assistance coming in, requests coming in for immigration attorneys, as well as, you know, family attorneys, people, you know, going through, family counseling or domestic violence type issues. So that's a much needed service, you know, that we're seeing a lot of demand. And so, you know, again, there's a lot of stuff that we wanted to talk about, but, you know, but just wanted to kind of like paint a picture for you about, you know, the number of individual lives. Like just last year, 55,000 individual lives were touched through all of our services. We are a volunteer community engagement, 30,000 plus volunteer hours just in the last year. And all of this, you know, we do it with 1.5 paid staff, everyone, including myself and our CEO here. We're all volunteers. No one gets paid. So we just have one case manager and 1.5 case managers, right? So a lot of this is through our community support and, you know, and also, and some grant funding that we've been able to get now from foundations and from the cities, like from, for example, you know, some of the COVID-19 grants came to us from the city of Bellevue that really helped us with providing the housing and rental support. So anyway, I'm going to, you know, Nikki, is there anything else you'd like to share that I missed?
Yeah, I think you do.
Yeah. And then just to talk a little bit about our success and challenges, right? So in terms of successes, you know, one of the things that, looking back, I think that one of the things that MAPS-MCRC has really been able to do is to provide socially and culturally appropriate services at a grassroots level to help people in need. Anyone who comes to us, you know, we do not turn them away. We either provide them with whatever assistance we can, or at least we connect them with other resources, right? So that's one of the things that we are proud of. We've been able to touch, many lives that way. In terms of challenges, I would say that, before I go there, one of the examples of success with Afghan refugees I'd like to share with you is this family that came to us through the asylum process. They did not come through the refugee resettlement process. We just got a call from a resettlement agency saying, hey, we don't know what to do with them. They're not through the resettlement process.
Yes, in 1 minute.
Thank you.
Sorry.
They were put up in a motel, in the South Seattle area. It was a family of four with two small children. We were able to bring them in, you know, locate them in a safe space for a few weeks until we were able to find, permanent housing from them. So those are the kind of like small successes. And individual lives that we're able to touch that really, you know, make the work that our volunteers do really, really, really meaningful.
I would like to just add, we not only housed them, but also gave them furniture, put the kids to school, and got them all the necessary household items, like basic, and settled them and navigated them in the community and showed them where things are. And still we are in touch, and we follow up with them, asking them on weekly basis, asking that if they need anything and how we can help, how the community can help you. So that's something we can.
I'll end with now two challenges. I mean, there's a lot more need out there. A lot more client demand. We're working hard to coordinate all the effort, especially with, the Afghan refugees coming in. We're working really hard to coordinate all our efforts, working with the resettlement agencies, working with other organizations to make sure that, we are coordinated, that we're not duplicating our efforts, that we're providing people the services that they need. That's one. And the second challenge I'll mention is like around, our emotional wellness. That's been a huge need. We've seen a huge demand for that. So that's something that's a program that we are trying to scale. And we're grateful for the City of Bellevue for the grant that they've recently given us for mental wealth and mental health, well-being. So we're really excited about scaling this program, to the next level. So anyway, so those are some of the highlights. Nikki, did you want to add anything, or did we cover everything?
Yes, we covered almost everything what the time given to us.
Yeah. So we'll stop here. We'll open it up for any questions that you may have.
Thank you to both of you. Commissioners, any questions? Well, we definitely appreciate you being here tonight, and it's nice to finally meet both of you. Your names are attached, particularly yours, Nikki, with a lot of agencies that are doing great work. And I want to say thank you to all the panelists. I see that a lot of you are still on the line, and we really appreciate that, because I think agencies hearing what other agencies are doing is helpful to promote networking and referrals and expansion of services where there might be some gaps. And so that's one of our goals, in addition to hearing what you do, is to introduce you to each other at maybe on a little more intimate basis than you have been before. And we hope you have some takeaways from the meeting that are beneficial. So, commissioners, if there's no further questions, we'll move on to our next item of business, which is the Parks and Open Space System Plan. So, who's doing the intro on that? Dee Dee? Anyone?
I can go ahead and do it.
Okay, thank you.
So Ryan Walker is joining us to give us an overview on the Open Spaces Plan for the City of Bellevue and to get some feedback from us. So I'll hand it off to you, Ryan.
Thanks very much, Christy. And is my screen showing up okay?
Yep, it looks great.
It is.
Okay, and let's see if it advanced properly. Okay, good. Excellent. Well, thanks everyone, and good to be with you. I would also like to thank the organizations. I was glad I was able to listen in for the first part of the meeting and hear about all the important work. So once again, thank you for sharing with us. So I'm Ryan Walker. I'm a planner over on the planning and acquisition side of Parks and Community Services Department. So tonight I'm going to be talking a little bit about a planning effort that is ongoing, and that is the Parks and Open Space System Plan update for 2022. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a flavor in some of our remaining time, and then really hope to have some discussion with you about what you would like to see in the park system and what you enjoy currently. So I'll move through a few slides to introduce the plan. And within Parks and Community Services, there's a variety of planning efforts that are conducted, including, of course, the Human Services Needs Update, also the Recreation Program Plan. The plan we're talking about tonight is really related to the parkland, the trails, the open space in our community and those facilities themselves. It's not so much directed at where every playground may go in a park and those sorts of details, but it's really focused on what are the underserved communities, where more parks may be needed in the future, What are some of those critical trail connections? Where might our focus be given changes in the community over, the past several years? And really, this is based, the basis for it comes from our comprehensive plan for the city as well as the department's strategic plan. So we hope that all of the plans work in concert as much as possible. So this is really our guiding document for acquisition of land, development of facilities, enhancement of facilities, and it holds those big ideas. So these are, you know, the parks throughout time that may have been thought about in the plan 15, 20 years ago, and then they finally are developed through their own planning processes. So this is usually where those ideas begin. And the plan has about a 20-year time horizon. It's updated every 6 years, meaning staff take a look to see what's changed in the community, what trends are out there, what recommendations may have been completed or no longer apply, and what may continue or be added potentially. And it is required for a couple of reasons, in addition to simply gaining community input and meeting the needs of residents. There also is a need to complete it for accreditation purposes for parks. And also some grants, including the state conservation grants, do require a plan be completed before the city can receive them. So currently we are moving through the planning process and are conducting public outreach this fall. Some of you may have seen links to a survey or other outreach materials come through your inbox or other social media over the past month or two. So currently we are wrapping that up here this fall, and then we'll be moving into draft plan review process, and ultimately plan adoption is anticipated in the spring by City Council. So some of the key elements of the plan, the community profile really looks at the trends, both in terms of demographics and other factors such as housing in the community and how that's really impacting our system, similar to the human needs assessment, I would say. Look at what the system has in it, inventory of the system. Look at what the policy, base policy says. We look at level of service, and this takes into account a couple of elements. There's public participation, how many people are participating in programs and in facilities. We also look at a couple of physical attributes. One is walkable access, and the map on the right-hand side is probably a little hard to see on the screen, but there's a goal in the city to have all park facilities within, or have all residents within 1/3 of a mile of a park facility entrance or a trail facility entrance. And that is a level of service objective. So currently the city has about 73% of residents that fit that. And those areas in green are the areas that are served with park access, but there are some notable gaps. I'll talk about that a little bit here in a moment. We also look at capital project objectives, and these are really the recommendations in the plan that ultimately may get developed. There's funding and maintenance strategy established, and of course, public involvement. So there's a variety of focus areas that are contained within the plan, and they're listed here. Basically, out of each of these focus areas, there are recommendations put forth, and those ideas ultimately may, once they gain momentum, be developed on their own and then be budgeted and implemented. So I'm going to go through a couple of the highlights of each focus area, including some of the larger efforts that have happened since the last plan in 2016. So open space, greenways, wildlife corridors, trails, that's really focused on a lot of our natural connections within the city, as well as some of those respite areas or greenway areas within our, shows many of the greenways that are being worked on through time. And there's goals and recommendations under this section to continue expanding and providing access through those greenways, as well as looking at conservation of natural resources throughout the city. park facilities focus area is really really looking at where are the communities or where are our community parks and our neighborhood parks located? How is that distribution throughout the city? And on the right-hand side, the areas particularly in purple are those that there's either a lack of a lot of parkland or there's not a lot of access to parkland. And these have held true for many years, and they include many of our growth corridors from downtown to Bell Red and the Crossroads, as well as also the I-90 corridor, Factoria Eastgate, where there just aren't a lot of parks in that area. So these are areas of interest for expanding the system in the future, at least some of the main areas. And this focus area of the plan looks at park development and taking from those areas that need parks, looking at how to develop neighborhood parks in those areas. And we've had a couple, including Bridal Trails. There's a park being developed in that area currently. Active recreation facilities focuses on indoor and outdoor recreation, and it includes a variety of facilities. So, for instance, the Surrey Downs Park was developed since 2016. We've had the Aquatic Center feasibility update, and there's constant enhancement renovation to many facilities throughout the city. So this looks at where new sports fields might go, where the Aquatic Center may go, for instance, putting those objectives up front in the plan. Our urban park systems really looks at some of those same areas, happen to be many of our more underserved communities in terms of park facilities, particularly on the neighborhood side. And as these areas grow, there's going to be more of a need over time. So we look at Bell Red, how that community may change in the future. Putting greenways in, putting new park facilities in will be important to look at. There's also been quite a few downtown park improvements that have happened in the past few years, including expansions to the playground and completion of the circle. Wilburton may be an addition here in this plan, and we're also Eastgate is also an urban park system that we are looking to expand a bit. The waterfront access, this is looking at where non-motorized access happens, primarily non-motorized access in the city. There's been a lot of activity, of course, in Maiden-Bower Bay Park over the past few years, and there will be more to come in the next few years. And this looks at also smaller dock facilities, as well as where points of access may be possible in the future. And finally, couple of focus areas that really tie the system together. Partnerships, and this could be public, private, could be with nonprofits, and how do we combine resources to provide park facilities throughout the city, provide programming, provide all those opportunities to all communities within the city. And also historic, cultural, and art resources. So looking at cultural landscapes, looking at where art may be possible within our parks, protecting history within our city. Certainly an underlying element. So those are just a flavor of what's in the plan. There's a lot of public involvement that goes into it, and there's a variety of presentations like we're doing tonight, as well as a lot of social media and other media that goes out. One important element is looking at survey data and the ability to gauge trends across the city. So if you haven't already, I would encourage anyone to go to the engagingbellevue.com website. From there, you can provide input directly into the website, either by mapping ideas or typing in ideas. You can also include a survey or a complete a survey that looks at how you use parks currently and how you might want to use them in the future. It is available in 7 languages. So we hope to get as much data as possible to build on on trends there. There is a parallel survey being conducted that is to a select sample of residents that looks to get a fairly equitable distribution as much as possible by geography and demographics. So that is also ongoing in case you may have received a letter or know somebody that, that might have received such an invitation. And I think one more. So I know we're running pretty short on time tonight, but I'd like to definitely have some discussion if we have a few minutes. And these are a few of the core public questions that we've asked the community. What do you like about the park system? What might you like to see added? How can access to parks be made safer and expanded? How could we make parks more welcoming to people of all ages, abilities, and backgrounds? And I think in particular with human services, I'm also interested in hearing about any trends that might be relevant to use of park facilities in the future, as well as any partnerships that are on the horizon that we might consider while developing the plan. And I will leave it there. Yes, I will leave it there for now and open it up for any discussion or questions.
Thank you, Ryan. We are running short on time, but I do want to offer some time to any commissioners that have direct input. Before we do that, I'd like to hear just very briefly what you have done as far as getting requesting input from any of the human service agencies that would deal with populations that would be heavy park users to get feedback. Has there been any coordinated effort to reach out to any agencies?
We've worked with the neighborhoods group over in community development, and they who've reached some of those communities. But I think I'd be open to hearing more about where we might reach out to further in particular and work through that. There's always more to do in that realm.
Commissioners, do any of you have any input you'd like to share?
This is Samira. I just have a comment and also congratulations on this tasteful thing that I saw. I'm so sorry. I go to that park almost every week, but I forget. Is the one on Lakemont? It's not Kelsey Creek, is it?
On Lakemont. It might be Lakemont Park.
Yeah, on Lakemont Boulevard.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there is a memorial bench, and it's only one there. And it's for a young boy that passed away, and people come and just put flowers, and I think his family puts flowers there, and I think it's so tasteful, and is wonderful use of the park also. People can sit there, but also is in memory of somebody. So I would love to see more of that, but not, I don't know if you guys charge for it or not. But, so I just thought it was wonderful. People come, look, leave flowers, and it's just so honoring and so heartwarming. So I just wanted to say thank you for that. And if we can have more of that, I would love that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Yeah.
Ryan, could you take your slides down so we can see the other commissioners?
Yeah, there we go.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any other commissioners want to provide some input tonight?
This is Sherry McClure, and I would just like to say I live across from the Bellevue Park, right downtown park, and the changes that have gone on there over the last year or so, and just the park in general. We are really grateful for it. We use it regularly, multiple times a week for our dogs and ourselves and walking to dinner. So I think you've done a great job. And Samaria, like you mentioned, there are several benches there as well that are commemorated to individuals. And so it's a lovely space. So I think you're doing a great job on the opportunities for getting out in the community. Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other commissioners? So Ryan, I think on the outreach point, you know, obviously the Bellevue Committee on Aging, any of the organizations that we're dealing with in the city that provide services to youth, and also those with disabilities are kind of obvious that would be great to reach out to get some feedback from on an organizational level.
Absolutely. I have presented to the Bellevue Network on Aging and YouthLink Council, and they've connected through some avenues, but I'm glad to connect offline about some further groups to reach out to directly.
Yeah, Dee Dee and Christy can do that. I mean, I'm thinking about Kindering and other child care type agencies and et cetera. So thank you so much for bringing this information to us tonight. And we'll encourage all the commissioners to take the survey and provide any specific information or feedback that they have.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Have a good rest of your evening.
Thank you. Dee Dee, would you like to introduce our final item under information with the commission, the approval of the 2022 Community Development Block Grant Annual Action Plan? You're muted. Although you're not, but we can't hear you. No, still can't hear you.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. My headphones were dying and technical difficulties are common. So, yes, tonight you will approve the 2022 CDBG Annual Action Plan. And what the action plan is the way we tell HUD each year how we're going to spend our entitlement funds. And it's submitted to HUD once we know our actual entitlement amount. I'm not going to go over the whole plan with you tonight. I sent it to you, to each of you via email, but I'll go over the highlights. It's really, the bulk of it is very similar each year. It reflects the goals of the consolidated plan, which is our 5-year overarching plan that talks about our goals and objectives for our CDBG dollars, and then the annual action plans are more specific about how those goals will be carried out each year. So the expected resources is the combination of our estimated entitlement amount and our estimated program income or loan paybacks. The annual goals and objectives, as I mentioned, are outlined in the consolidated plan, and they each one of our projects ties to a goal. So, for example, one of the goals is to promote economic development. So that would be our microenterprise assistance program. And what's called non-community development programs in HUD speak, there are things like Jewish Family Service and preventing homelessness can also come under home repair. The meat of the plan and what changes each year is the projects and how much money is being allocated to each. And this is your funding recommendations that you approved last month for the 2022 CDBG funds. The City Council approved those on November the 8th. So those are just outlined in the plan as you all approved. And finally, it outlines what we're required to do as far as citizen participation and consultation. And that's the majority of that is our public notices to let the public know that they can comment on a plan or can come to a public hearing to speak to the commission. And we send the draft plan out to some agencies for their consultation if they wish to give any input. So all of those components are part of HUD's requirements. This is a plan that's really kind of a template that I fill out each year. And it reflects, as I said, your funding recommendations. So the final step is for the commission to approve the annual action plan so it's ready for submission to HUD once we have our exact entitlement amount and it's ready to be formally submitted. That's just a brief overview of the plan. Do you have any questions about it?
Any questions, commissioners? If not, would someone like to make a motion and a second to approve the plan?
Tim Ma, motion to approve CDBG action plan.
Jude Mercer, second.
Thank you, Tim and Jude. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, the motion carries. Anything else on under our information for the commission session?
No, that was the last of that agenda item. I think we're just...
Right, the next item of business is old business. And since this is certainly my last commission meeting, I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to say a few things. Oh my goodness, I'm getting like teary. Alex and I, when she was getting ready to retire, we're looking back about, you know, the time frame of when we were both involved here at the city. And my first commission stint started in 2000 and went to 2006. And then I was off the commission for a few years and came back in 2014 to 2021. So the time range that I've been involved has been pretty extensive. And I have to admit that it's been really an honor to serve those that live and work in the city of Bellevue. I've been really proud of the impact that the commission has had over this period of time, not only in Bellevue, but on the entire east side. It's been really inspirational to work with such professional, knowledgeable, and dedicated staff over the years. There's been, you know, too many to mention, but those of you that are here tonight, I really want to express my appreciation for all the work that you do for the city and for the commission. It's been really inspiring to get to know those serving others in the Human Services Commission and community, all the great organizations that we've worked with, all the very, very dedicated executive directors, the tireless staff members, and the, you know, multitude of volunteers that work to serve our less fortunate members of our community. It's been an honor to work with you guys, with this group of commissioners. I've seen a lot of changes, but nothing like the change that has come about since this particular group has been on the commission. You've had a willingness to, change the status quo, to think outside the box and to demand to see results, which is, you know, very inspiring. But I feel like the commission is really in good hands going forward, and I just want to thank each of you for the kind words and messages that you sent. Seeing all the great things that you guys do in the future. And with that, I'll let anybody else that has old business say a few words.
Chair Klein, we were also going to want to take a few minutes to just acknowledge you, whether it was under old or new business, and acknowledge the many years and the great contribution that you've made to the community and the way you've shaped each of us from your extensive knowledge and history. I think even the approach that you're taking in your timing for stepping off the commission shows the model of servant leadership that you display in all that you do, that you're choosing your timing in a way that would be best for the commission to onboard someone new. So I personally deeply respect the expertise that you bring. I've learned from you. I learn from you every meeting and your graciousness and your inclusive spirit. And you will be so very deeply missed. So thank you for your tremendous public service that you have given to the community and to each of us here. And I agree, anybody else that wants to chime in, please do.
I appreciate that, Tony. And like I said, I've already heard from most of you. So, you know, I appreciate your comments and hope to keep in touch going forward. And like I said, I'll be checking in and see what's going on. So, let's move
Michelle,
on.
I just wanted to quickly add one more note.
Okay.
As the senior staff person here, staffing the commission that, especially the last couple of years, infamous 2020 and 2021, you have dedicated so much time to the commission and to staff, especially last year when you were vice chair. You and Tim had several additional meetings, pre-meetings with staff. That was much appreciated. Your time this year, your steady hand during these crazy times has been very much appreciated, and you will definitely be missed, especially your accountant's eye on the applications and making sure that the finances make sense. I am not an accountant. I don't even play one on TV. So I really appreciate your expertise. But you have certainly served well and long, and you deserve your Tuesday nights, first and third Tuesday nights of the month free. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to ditto kind of what both Didi and Tony have said. I have learned so much from you, having never been involved in a commission prior to moving into this position. And I have watched you mentor new commissioners that have come on especially through the funding process and really helping people find their voice. And I think that that's so impactful, because I think sometimes when you have the experience, it's just easier to be the loud voice in the room. And I think that you always make sure that everybody's voice is heard. And I see the relationships you build even during this remote time where we're not face-to-face and we can't have those small side conversations pre- and post-meeting. I feel like you've done an amazing job leading us through the process and being a leader even when you're not in a leader role. So you are in the chair position now, but even when you weren't, you still were kind of that quiet leader, making sure everybody's voice was heard and that you were speaking for both the people that were receiving our services, as well as looking at from a funder perspective. And your fiscal stewardship and eye for accounting is going to be missed. So, but I feel like you also taught us a lot of staff and the other commissioners. So I think the legacy will live on.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And of course, I choose to speak right as my dog decides to grab a squeaky toy. I can't even imagine this commission without you. As we move on and it's a funding year, the idea that, I mean, you're the last commissioner that you're the oldest commissioner besides me. And now I'm the oldest one, and I certainly do not have even, half the experience that you have on the commission. I don't know, but I mean, the guidance and just the expertise you've provided over the many, many years that we've done this, I just can't even imagine continuing. And so I'm a little choked up to say goodbye. Thanks.
Michelle, let me just echo, you know, what the other commissioners and staff have said. I mean, you've been an incredible mentor to all the commissioners, and you're going to be sorely missed. I mean, for me, going through two funding cycles with you, so much of what I learned was from you was really honing in and asking the right questions. And I think really challenging us as a commission to, as you said, to demand performance, you know, sort of ask the right questions. So I sincerely thank you, and you'll be very much missed.
Well, thank you all. And as you know, I'm a real stickler for ending the meeting on time. So it's 8:00. is there any new business that we need to address? All right. Well, with hearing none, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn.
Tim Ma, motion to adjourn. And thank you again, Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you all again, and see you soon. Good night. Good luck next year in the funding cycle.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Michelle.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye.